Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 17th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, we're doing a photography show today, something we do every few months or so, and this time we talk about the art of taking photographs with veteran photographer and instructor Michael Zide, whose work has appeared in the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and in galleries all over the country. He's here to answer your questions and give you some sound advice for all the photo opportunities in your life. To join today's discussion, call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also see some of Michael Zide's work at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. There's a slideshow there. So we'll talk scenic landscapes, portraits, your calls. It's all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Photography is our topic today. Whether you photograph digitally or you're one of the dwindling few who still uses film, when it comes to taking a good photo, there are a few tricks. Michael Zide has mastered them all. His work has appeared everywhere from the New York Times and Boston Globe to the Santa Barbara Museum of Art and the State House in Boston. He is an instructor of photography and has taught or spoken on photography all over the region. He's here to answer your questions about everything from taking a portrait to nature photography. Michael Zide is our guest today. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org if you want to email, or tweet us if you wish, voxpop, at WAMC Voxpop, I should say, is our Twitter handle, at WAMC Voxpop, or, well, that's enough. Email, call, the number is 800-348-2551. Michael Zide, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Ray. It's great to be here.
You got a frog in your throat.
I've got at least two or three.
What happened?
It's called a summer cold.
Okay.
And I suppose there's a certain sense that that should be light and airy, but yeah, it's actually really destructive.
Well, good. Well, thank
voice.
You for sharing it here.
You're
in the
welcome.
Cooped quarters of Studio A. I'll be receiving it myself very soon. Well, nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much.
And if our listeners care to go to wamc.org/voxpop, you'll see a great slideshow of some photographs that Michael has taken. And sort of the topic you want to discuss early on in the program today is photographing what you know. And the first shot is so striking on the slideshow. And I guess you took that right across the street from
right across the street.
It's amazing. Absolutely. It's a shot of some sort of tree with bare branches aiming toward the heavens, and then to the right is a weeping willow, I think, just right. Sort of right. Bowing down in depression, and beautiful clouds, and it's extremely well lit. And that was right in front of your own house.
We were talking before the show started about the importance of having a dog in your life if you're going to be a landscape photographer. I've gotten really a large number of pictures only because she got me outside when normally I would probably be doing something indoors to see something that I could take advantage of. I hate to put it that way, but that's what one does as a landscape photographer. And a lot of it has to do with weather, and weather changes constantly, and dogs need to
go out
and do what they need to do.
Sure.
On a regular basis. So there's a few shots, if you look at the slideshow. One is an aurora borealis.
Which is terrific.
Thank you so much. And one is the homepage image on my website, which is just my name with a couple of W's.com. But really, I owe a lot to them, and because photography is really chance and opportunity.
So the photograph I'm referencing, this shot that was taken just outside your own home, obviously, you, I assume, are seeing in color, and you are photographing, or at least developing, in black and white.
Right.
And your work has a very strong emotion. It evokes emotion.
Thank you.
And oftentimes, there is an underlying, maybe, sometimes there's an underlying, not menace to it, but there's a certain drama to some of the shots. And so when you see something in color, how do you know, gosh, this will work in this exposure setting?
It's interesting. I give a lot of thought to how to construct a picture because I talk about it with people. And really, you have to respond to whatever interests you. And as you said, I tend to look at things that are quirky, perhaps slightly menacing, always with surprise. Surprise to me, and I hope that surprise carries over to the viewer. So I'm constantly looking for situations that are, and this is not my quote, but it's finding the unusual, you know, in the commonplace. And many times that doesn't work, and many times it does. And after 5 decades, you've got to create a body of work if you keep taking one step in front of the next.
And you have a sense automatically in your head that says, even though I am human being looking at a normal something I've seen every day for the last X number of years outside my home in color, and you say, oh, this is an image that will capture this emotion.
You know, Ray put it perfectly about photographing what you know has its advantages, and obviously photographing something close to home has its advantages because you don't always have a camera with you. Perhaps you should, but you don't necessarily have one when you need it. The tree that you're referencing is an apple tree in an unused orchard. They've let it go. And so I noticed it. I've lived across the street from it for 30 years, and obviously, or rather 20 years, and obviously it's changed over time. If you were to look at it now, you would see no shot there because it's in leaf.
Right.
But in the winter, I saw this tree and made use of the fact that it has an unusual gesture that went perfectly with what was happening in the sky. For instance, if you looked at a tree and it looked to you emotionally like it was smiling, yeah. I don't think those clouds would have been the appropriate clouds to get.
So they're striated clouds of some kind?
They're very strange.
Yeah.
We'd been into to Boston to have lunch with my son, my wife, Yana, and I. And we had come home, and the first thing I had to do, because we had been away from the dog for about 8 hours, was to walk her. Only because I walked her. When I drove up to the house, those clouds weren't there. When I walked her, I began to notice that things were strange. Mm. And so I turned around after she had done what she needed to do, put her in the house, got my gear, went back to directly across the street, and found a gesture, a tree that whose shape fit with the background, which was so important, of those clouds. The two together enforce one another. And that's the important thing, that the emotion enforces each other.
But the extra wild card in the picture, to me, and it's a powerful one, is the weeping willow.
Well, you know, you always ask things that are appropriate to the discussion. I don't know how you do it.
Well, believe me, it's no skill. It's all luck, let me tell you.
I have to tell everyone who's out there who says, well, you know, great shot. I can't do that. Let me just say this, that out of the 40 or 50 exposures that I made, and I varied a lot of them because I know enough to realize that I may, at that moment, not realize which shot may turn out to be best. That was only one frame of 40 or 50 shots that included both trees.
Ah, very interesting.
I don't feel proud of that fact, but that's how photography works. It's a matter of taking advantage of the opportunity in every way you can.
Do you strictly work when you're doing landscapes like this in black and white?
I do.
Do you think there's more power in that?
I think it's a different power. Color is fantastic and incredibly powerful. And again, each color has its own force and feeling.
Yeah.
I began in black and white. I go back to 1969, basically, is when I got into photography, more or less. And it was all darkroom work. And the only thing I could afford to do on my own was make pictures in black and white and print them. And in printing, and that's something everyone out there probably realizes, or let me just say it again, you take a picture and then the post-processing, now for me it's digital, gives you all kinds of clues as to how to enforce and intensify the feeling that you begin to see that you might not have fully realized when you made that exposure initially.
Our guest today is Michael Zide. We talk photography. The number to call is 800-348-2551, and we'll get right to the calls in a moment or two. I just wondered, offhand, were you a fan of Bergman films?
That's a great, it's a wonderful point. I'm driving up here from Amherst, Mass. To have this discussion with you, and I'm thinking, what are the points I really want to get across? One of them, yes, I was a fan of his. Films were also indoctrinated into how to see the world in terms of photography through the films that we grew up seeing. Film noir, The Maltese Falcon, all of these kind of anti-hero films.
Absolutely.
With dark shadows and brooding light are lessons that as photographers we all take in and utilize.
You know, I never asked this question. I never thought of it. Did he do his own cinematography, or did he have a cinematographer on his, say Seventh Seal or Wild Strawberries or one of those?
My memory does not go back. Luckily, it may go back a day or two at this point.
Yeah, but you and me both.
But I have to say, from what I recall, he was the art director. Mm. His shots were his shots. He was known. In fact, I remember someone saying to me, who was a photographer, and this is just the beginning of my career, every shot he takes is like a perfect still image. You could print that one image and you would have art.
But it reminds me, some of his film work reminds me of some of the landscape pictures. There are some that you showed me now before the show of trees in the mist. Yeah. And again, there's a sense of foreboding. It works perfectly in black and white. And immediately I thought Bergman, yeah, that's just me. Good thing I didn't say Jerry Lewis, right?
Yes, it is a good thing that you didn't say that.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Michael Zeid is our guest. We'll get to the phones. Thanks for being patient, Brandon and Jeff and all the rest. We'll get to you in a moment. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. We talk photography today. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. And the Lake George Association, formed in 1885 to protect Lake George water for New Yorkers. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org/join.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined, as we have been from time to time, by photographer Michael Zeid. What is your website, by the way?
Well, the 3Ws.michaelzeid.com.
And Zeid is spelled Z-I-D-E, right? Okay, my script was correct. Well, bonus points to Jessica Marshall. All right, the number here is 800-348-2551. We'll get to the phone calls in a moment. This is an email that came in from Lily, who says, "Hi, I have an Ansco color clipper from 1960. What kind of film should I purchase? Any tips in layman's terms for shooting with this camera?"
You know, I'm not an expert on all the cameras that go back in time, even current cameras. I know the equipment I use, but it's hard to keep track with all the advances that are taking place.
Yeah.
But it's the size of the film that you have to match to the spool, basically, that will feed through your camera. I'm not sure what size that is. You probably can go online if you can determine whether it's 120 film or whatever odd size it might be. And I don't mean odd in any kind of pejorative way, but film sizes were different back then.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Brandon and Saugerties, you've been waiting a while, my friend. You're first.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
I've got a real simple question for you. I know that, I guess, in the last 20 years, you know, technology has taken over, and we've gone from going from film to, like, a more digital sense with cameras, and we're almost getting instant results. It seems like, you know, you don't have to wait nearly as long for your film to develop and see, you know, where your good shots are and where your bad shots are. My question is, what have we lost from doing that, from not having to wait and almost getting instant results of you can actually sit there and take 100 pictures and choose the best one?
Sounds like a gain to me.
To me, I have to say, Brandon, that it's a total gain. But here's the caveat. that just because you can take 100 pictures, if you're not aware of what you're doing while you're taking them, you may basically be enamored of one particular thing and keep shooting 100 pictures of it and varying the exposures, when all you had to do was move over 3 feet to your left or right, or get down on your belly, as they say, or climb a ladder and get a much better shot. I think that there's a word in photography that we all use when we're teaching it, and that's intention. You have to shoot with intention and think about, by basically, it's a step-by-step process, learning along this journey what you have to include and the possibilities that are in front of you, and what you need to do to really take advantage of that moment. So the fact that you can shoot 100 isn't necessarily an advantage, but it could be. The other thing I want to mention is, I think that photography is a lot like painting. We used to use darkroom, and we used to darken and lighten things selectively. Now, you're both a photographer, which means that you have to find the subject, but you're also a bit like a painter, and the tools in Photoshop or Lightroom are so fabulous. You can really see your image come to life in ways you hadn't even think of processing it, to create a real personal sense of vision.
All right. Brandon, thanks a lot for the call. Do you have to know yourself before you can take meaningful photographs?
That's another good question. I'll stop saying that to you, because they all have been. You do come to know yourself through your photography. At the beginning, you take anything that catches your eye, and generally you're pretty non-discriminatory. It really is a step-by-step process, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I've come to know what I respond to. I come to know what it is that not only catches my eye, but the feeling that generally I try for in my pictures. At the beginning, I had no clue. Everyone is capable of doing this. It's just a matter of being critical and looking at your work and trying to see where it lets you down, compared to the work that you may see from other photographers in books or at a museum show.
In looking at the, and we'll get right to the phones in a moment, in looking at the body of work that I've looked at online, there is I wouldn't say an overarching theme that you can pinpoint, but you can tell, okay, this is a Michael Zide photo. When you are taking your photographs, for instance, that picture that's number one in our slideshow that we referenced at the beginning of the show, with the apple tree reached up toward the sky, the weeping willow bent down, the clouds, the interesting striated clouds. What of you does that show?
If you're doing this as fine art, as opposed to simply making a record of the moment, art is all about showing your deepest feelings or feelings, not to get overly sentimental about it, but it's really all about you. I'm really trying to find who I am in my relationship to the landscape through photography. It's a different language than simply responding to a sunrise or a rainbow, but I'm always, if I see a sunrise or a rainbow, I'm always looking for that, in quotes, hero, that subject that everything else will be background to, intensifying the feeling that I'm trying to achieve.
Does it surprise you when someone viewing it has a completely different reaction?
I love that. It's amazing how this is another subject that people out there, if you like photography and you want to try and increase your skill level, it's about reading photographs. And I wish I could give you the name of a book that I'll give you the name of one book that I think you will all benefit from. And it's called Light, Gesture, and Color by Jay Maisel, M-A-I-S-E-L. He's a fabulous photographer, one of the best color photographers. But he talks about a lot of the things that I believe in, gesture and emotional tone. Well, I have to say, I have forgotten the original question a bit. Let's go back to that. Do you remember it, Ray?
The original question was, part of you is in that photograph? But then the second question was, are you surprised at the reactions that maybe are completely different from what you originally thought when you took the picture?
I'm always surprised. Well, not always, but often enough. But there is a book that I was trying to reference, but I didn't bring it as a note card for myself to give you. It's about reading photographs.
Yeah.
Everybody In order to understand how photographs work, you can get a great deal of knowledge by trying to understand how other photographers' photographs work for you. It's whether it's composition, whether it's tone, it's lighting, it's the gesture, the shape of the subject matter. There's a lot of things that you respond to. And I think that to find a book on reading photography, there's a Canadian whose last name or first name I don't really recall, but it's a book of about 75 photographs that he interprets to begin with, and then the photographer talks about what they saw.
Oh, very
in
interesting.
Own photograph.
Michael Zeid is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Jeff in Cobleskill. Jeff.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Michael. Quick question for you, Michael. I've been shooting 120 for about a year now, and one thing I've avoided is pushing film. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about pushing film.
What does that
why
mean?
You would do this. I'll let Michael answer that.
Okay. Pushing film means overdeveloping it longer than the recommended time. And you do that to increase contrast or to create a certain feeling. If anyone wants to see an extreme use of that, if you go to my website and look under the third portfolio, which is Other Journeys, there's a picture of sagebrush that I underexposed and massively overdeveloped. So what I've gotten now is basically a black background, which originally was more light gray because it was just afternoon light, but it brought out the white, bone-like whiteness of the sagebrush.
Hmm.
So you use it to create feeling and to create what it is you first thought about the subject. It's an enhancing mood. Ansel Adams, that name is probably familiar to most people. He came up with the zone system, which really goes into a lot of detail about how to expose and process film for different effects. But the last point is, since you're using 120, you have a large negative space. You may increase your grain, but if you begin with a Panatomic X, a slow ISO film, your grain is very fine, and it won't really matter even if you blow the image up large after you've pushed it.
All right.
So if I'm shooting like a 200, maybe push to even 600 or 800.
That's you'll have to judge if the grain structure that you get matches the mood that you're striving for. So it really is a personal feel. You might find that it's a wonderful effect that you've achieved, but you may also say, well, this is way too grainy for what I was trying to get.
All right. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jessica in Hadley, Mass. Jessica.
Hi.
Hi.
Been listening to your show and I'm really enjoying it, and I want to ask like 5,000 things, but I'm going to stick with, I got a Pentax K1000 when I was about 12 or 13, and I'm going on my 54th birthday, and I gave up photography for many years. It got too expensive and too involved. And then I got an iPhone, and I am finding that with a camera in my back pocket all the time, I'm shooting again. And part of me is like, oh, yeah, it's just a crappy ass.
Nice. Well, it's a little too late now. All right, fine. We'll just call that the line that you cannot cross, okay?
I'm sorry. It's just an iPhone, and, if I'm going to take this, I guess I feel like my photographs are really good, and I don't know. Got any advice for an old person taking photographs who's kind of new at it all over again?
I think iPhones are fabulous. The one thing I don't like about iPhones, to be perfectly honest, is that they're taking work away from struggling photographers, because everyone is a photographer in quotes these days.
But we're terrible.
Right.
Well, most clients don't realize that. They're just trying to save money.
Yeah. Right,
but honestly, there's all kinds of, I don't shoot with an iPhone. In fact, I have a flip phone. My wife has an iPhone. What I have to say is, any picture that you make that's a reflection of how you felt about the subject is worth making.
It doesn't
matter what you make it with. A lot of people shoot with plastic cameras or even create their own cameras out of the worst lenses they can find because the images look dreamlike.
Hmm.
So there are no rules. If it makes you happy, make the picture.
Yeah, it really does.
I like
All
it.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks,
cool.
Jessica.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. I have one of the, I think an iPhone 6, and it's much better camera than even the iPhone 5. And so when we were on vacation, we were out at the ocean. There was a big storm, and then the sun came out, and a full double rainbow over the ocean, horizon to horizon, and I snap pictures with my iPhone, and every one of them stinks. You know, every one of them.
If here are the possibilities in a situation like that. Obviously, if there's some very cool rock sitting out in the water, that can be kind of like your foreground element. The other thing a lot of photographers do these days is put on these filters that basically will stop your camera down 9 stops worth of light so that you can have a very long exposure, assuming the rainbow isn't moving, and I don't think they do.
No.
So you can get an incredibly interesting effect of moving water over a long period of time.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that might be something that you could play with.
Well, I'll show them to you after the show and you get a good chuckle. All right, our guest is Michael Zeid. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Hedvig and Hudson, you're on.
Hi. I wonder what you had to say about the phenomenon when it's photographing a majestic ridge of mountains or a mountain formation, unless you're doing it from another height, so you're looking across at it, it always looks in the photograph a whole lot smaller than it looks to you when you're looking at it. Now, I'm not saying I don't understand this, but I'm a painter and I have a whole way of understanding it. But I just wondered what you had to say about it.
You know, it's a great question to ask. Obviously, what its size is in relation to some foreground elements will either, perhaps make it look flatter or more majestic than it normally would. I have the same problem from...
Wow, you all right? Did you drive away, Hedvig?
No, okay. Right here. What did he just say?
I have the same problem because there's what we call the Seven Sister Ridge in the Amherst, basically, area. And what I've found is... there's an angle that I can't quite get to, and I'm calling the we don't have national parks, but we have state I'm not sure what you'd call them. The state rangers man them. I've been calling them to see if they know of a place I can be where I can get the view that I want.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is things either have a feeling of largeness or smallness, partially dependent upon the lens that you're using and its focal length, and what it has in relationship to it that makes it look grand. A ridge, the Seven Sisters, are a very gentle curve. They do not look like the Rockies. But if you couple that with some incredible clouds at sunset, and perhaps give it a 6-second exposure and the clouds move slightly.
I don't think there's any reception problems here. I'm just telling the engineer that it's not coming through very well to me.
Well, I'm sorry. If you want, Michael...
Yeah, that's good. That's good. You changed it.
Okay, great. He gave a pretty detailed answer, and if you want to hear it after this program is done, about 10 minutes after the show's over, it'll be online at WAMC.org, and he gave
I wanted to comment further. Am I still on the air?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, there's from a painter's point of view, and I'm not obviously going to go into that. There's a book called Cezanne's Composition by Earl Lorand. It was written back in, the 30s or something. And it explains the phenomenon from the point of view of a painter and how to counteract it, what to do about it composition-wise. It's very interesting. I should think if that photographer would find it interesting, too.
Okay.
And that's how I learned that when I'm painting, if I really want to do it, how I have to compensate for the phenomenon.
Well, thank you, Hedvig. We appreciate the call very much. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say that light and shadow also play a large part in perception of size and things, so that you can wait for the right day, the right clouds, the right light breaking through.
Yeah. All right, let's go quickly before our next break to Paul in Albany. Paul, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question about... submitting photos that I take my digital camera onto the internet and share them on websites like Flickr and things like that. Like, my question is, what is like a good size, like file size, to submit the photos in?
That's a good question. I think each one of these platforms has their own dimensions that they suggest you put your pictures, downsize them to. Generally, 72 dpi, which is, dots per inch, is the size that they want for viewing on a computer screen. But they all vary. So you really should check. You can Google the name of the platform and ask what size best fits their use.
Thank you, Paul. We appreciate it. Oh, by the way, we had a note here from Peter, who writes, Sven Nykvist was Bergman's cinematographer on almost all of his films. Bergman gave him immense credit and leeway. Sven was a great artist. So that answers
that
question.
That's a wonderful answer.
And then our producer found out that the Canadian Photography book is by Freeman Patterson.
No.
No?
I'm sorry.
Okay,
to
well,
say.
That's a note.
I appreciate that.
All right.
That he does do some wonderful books. This one is by, if you Google reading photographs by a Canadian author who was formerly a doctor,
yeah,
you might have a chance. It came out in 19. Let me.
All right.
It came out in the I think 2008, but I'll try to think about this between questions.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. I'll give you a good minute and a half to think about things. It's 800-348-2551. Michael Zide is our guest, and we'll hit the home stretch on Vox Pop right in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Water Wheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. The Arthur Zankiel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, presenting Strange Haven with author Sigmund Tobis, memoir of World War II Jewish refugees, living in Shanghai, August 21st, 7 p.m. at Congregation Shara Tefillah, Saratoga Springs, jewishculturalfestival.org. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans with weekly tastings, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. And Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community. Since 1939, ColbyService.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. We talk photography today with Michael Zide. Our phone number is 800-348-2551. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, came in incensed. Apparently, she's not the one who gave us the incorrect information about Canadian photographer Freeman Patterson. Just want to make that clear. Came from somebody else, not Jessica. Okay, now that we've sorted that out, let's go to Jim in New Jersey. Jim, you're on with Michael Zide.
Michael Zide. Jim, how are you?
Jim, you sound great. How are you? Great to hear from you.
You sound a little under the weather. I wanted to call, number one, and thank WAMC Public Radio and Vox Pop for doing such a marvelous thing in broadcasting these events. It's wonderful to hear. It's a great opportunity for everybody to learn, you know, about photography and fine art photography people. And I just wanted to quickly say thank you both for your dedication to our art. And we certainly appreciate it out here in the real world.
Thank you.
Let me just say one thing. That this man, Jim Roselli, I co-teach with him at Maine Media Workshops. He is a savant in the world of digital image making.
Wow. So he's not an idiot savant. He's a savant.
No, he's a real savant.
Oh, good. All right. Well, Jim, you're welcome to call anytime then. That's great.
All right. I thank you, but I did want to just forward and say, you know, it's great that WAMC is doing this, and it's a wonderful opportunity for people to hear and, you know, call them with the questions. I don't want to take the time and give up people opportunity, but I certainly did want to say thank you both very much.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate the call. Well, you know, I know nothing of photography. I mean, that's what makes this show work. It's the Larry King method, who said, I'll never read the book. I don't know anything about it. And it always works because you ask questions that anybody would ask.
You ask the right questions.
Well, that you
time
see,
and time again.
There you go. My lack of knowledge really pays off. Our number here is 800-348-2551. And if you go to our website, wamc.org/voxpop, you'll see a very nice slideshow of at least seven pictures photos that Michael Zide has taken. And the one of the aurora, which I've seen before, it's truly amazing. And I just wondered, how long did you leave the exposure open for that one?
That was approximately 30 seconds.
Wow.
Pardon me. All my life, I've been waiting to see an aurora. Growing up in Los Angeles, we don't have them usually. And the dogs needed to be walking at 2 in the morning. So I walked them, came back inside, got my camera and tripod, walked back out. One thing to think about, and you probably all realize it, it's best to have a cable release when you're doing a 30-second exposure and not to use your finger to hold to depress the shutter, because that will give you camera movement. But this also a 1.4 35 millimeter lens that I used, opened up to 1.4. So this was not one of your most brilliant auroras, but I used a very fast aperture and a long shutter speed. And in the darkroom, this was taken in the early 70s, I pushed the film a bit and then printed it on very high contrast printing paper so that the stars and the aurora would come forward and make the statement that they do.
It's a striking shot. And
thank you.
It's a portrait, right? It's not a landscape. It's a very elongated portrait.
It's a vertical image.
Yeah.
It's actually, I was telling you, Ray, a moment ago, after 40 years of the house that's in that picture, I got an email from the children of, or one of the daughters of the original owners of the house, who had finally seen the picture after a very, very long period of time in it, and purchased a copy of it. It now resides in their home, which I'm very, very happy about.
Nice. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Michael Zide is our guest. Leslie in Altamont. Leslie, you're on.
Hi. Excuse my voice. I'm losing it. But
you and the guest.
For your listeners, I just wanted to let you know that the Munson Proctor Williams Museum in Utica, New York, this month is having the Scott McCurry exhibit of photographs that he did for National Geographic, the Afghan Girl, and all those. And it's wonderful. It's definitely worth the trip to Utica.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Leslie. You're in Altamont. Are you avoiding the fair, or are you going to the fair?
Well, Saturday I want to see the Budweiser wagon.
Oh, yeah. I got to get up there. We'll be up there, just if nothing else, for the fried Twinkies, right?
Yep.
Well, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551. Michael Zide is our guest. All right, this one came in via email, and then we'll get back to the phones, Michael. This one's from Alan in Colony. I have a new Nikon digital camera, which I love. Problem is, I don't know where or how to get prints from my favorites. I don't have a printer, so I'm looking for a place where I can have that done. There must be places that do this. I just don't know where. That's from Alan in Colony.
Well, if you're not going to print them yourself, and I understand that that requires a certain knowledge and a certain printer to be able to really do a good job, Miller's Imaging, they're out in Kansas, is one of the best labs that I know. They have a fantastic work ethic, and they do a great job. So you'll take your files and send them to them. And
electronically via like Dropbox, or do you send them hard copy?
You would send them, send them by email, or they still make CDs. You could send them on a disc.
There you go.
What I would do is I would call Miller's Imaging and talk with them.
All right, that's a good bit of advice. Mary in Saratoga Springs. Mary, you're on.
Oh, hi, Ray. Thank you. I have, it may be a stupid question, but I'm an older woman, and one of my granddaughters was married last year at a lovely, small, intimate wedding at the boathouse in Central Park. So I'm waiting to get the album. So the album comes. She says, Grandma, here's your album. And she hands me a CD.
Oh, yeah.
I said, what do I do with this? She says, you put it in the computer. Now, Grandma is not that smart. So these are lovely pictures. Is there a method? Could I take them somewhere and have it change into an old-fashioned wedding album?
You absolutely can. This is one of the problems with the photographic industry these days. I can't tell you how many weddings I've done in the past, and now most clients ask for a CD, which takes the control of the print quality totally out of the hands of the photographer.
I know. My brother was a photographer, and he took my wedding 60 years ago.
There you go.
Unfortunately, he's not around anymore. No. He worked for Life magazine.
Oh, well, that's a good credential.
Yeah.
You know what I would say to you? The same thing I said to the former caller. Call Miller's Imaging. I'm going to have to let them know to listen to an archive edition of this
show.
But call them Miller's Imaging, and they do a very good job, and they can take your CD. They can have a discussion with you over the phone about what you should do.
I mean, and also, Mary, there are any number of places locally that if you're not overly concerned with art quality prints, you can take that CD and get prints made.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Our guest is Michael Zeid, 800-348-2551. Greg in Shutesbury, Massachusetts, you're on.
Good afternoon. What a great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have four Canon A1 chassis and numerous Pelican cases full of SD lenses, the highest quality any of us could buy at the time. And I love them, and I've considered going digital, but everything feels cheap. You hold it in your hand, you hold the lens, and you start moving it, and it's just everything's plastic. I understand that at one time there were some companies making digital backs for some of the benchmark cameras, but it's my understanding that the focal lengths and dimensions or at ratios are wrong for the old lenses. Now, it's the lenses that cost the lion's share of the money, and I do everything from micro to landscape. So,
okay.
Very curious about where we could weigh in on this.
All right, that's a great question.
Well, if your film camera is a full-frame film camera, which I assume it is, they make different lenses that either fit a smaller format for digital cameras or the full-frame format. The full-frame format cameras would take your lenses undoubtedly as long as you may have to buy an adapter for that purpose. My suggestion is you go to I live in Amherst, so you and I are neighbors.
How about that?
Give Hunt's a call. They're the local camera store, and they can give you some good information about how to transition to digital without having to give up all of your equipment.
Okay. I'm sorry, what was the name of that local store?
It's Hunt's, H-U-N-T-S, and they're in Holyoke.
Oh, they went to Holyoke.
They moved to Holyoke from Hadley. Yes, they did.
All right, Greg, thank you very much. Let's go over to Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to comment on the lady that had the K-1000.
Yeah.
I've been still shooting film. I haven't gone the really digital route yet, and I have two of them, and it's great bringing that K-1000 and you're putting film in it and bringing it to get it developed. And the value in that, I see, is that anticipation of waiting for it and seeing what you really got. And then you also seem to plan more when you have film. You know, you're only going to take one or two shots, not 40 shots. So you seem to take a little bit more time and center it up and everything like that. And it's a great way, and I get a CD when I develop it anyway, so it's a great way to help my local photo lab, too.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to say, that the photo labs and the photography shops are having a difficult time. If you're loyal to them, they'll be loyal to you. And I think the one thing I would say also, though, there is a disadvantage in only having 10 shots to take or 20 shots to take, because as a landscape photographer, things change constantly. What I would hate to be in, I'd hate to be in the position where right after I ran out of film, something magnificent happened in terms of a change in the environment that I wish I had another frame to shoot. There's a fabulous story that my old friend Steve Sint once told me, and that was a newspaper photographer who was shooting 4x5 speed graphic. That means one shot, and then they have to take the film holder out and reverse it and put it back in. Very slow and cumbersome. It's a sad story, unfortunately. Someone was about to be assassinated, a Japanese, this is a news photographer, diplomat. Everybody shot all of their film before the final moment. He waited and took one picture and got the shot. It's a bad story, but it proves a point, unfortunately.
When did you make the switch to digital?
I made the switch probably in around the year 2000.
Yeah.
And I was not happy about having to learn all of the new technology and also pay for it. I think all the photographers had to go through a learning curve and a financial curve. But I think it's really, it's got so many pluses to it that if I had my druthers, I wish I had begun in that medium as opposed to only having been in it for the last 15, 16 years.
Certainly a film-like dreaminess to some of your shots, though, I think, anyway.
Well, you know, thank you. I like to hear that you respond that way. There's an architecture in a photograph, and it really is a reflection, obviously, of what was in front of the lens at that moment. But through post-processing, and you could do it in the darkroom, and you can more easily do it with Photoshop or Lightroom, which are the go-to applications for this kind of thing, you can change things from what it looked like to something other. I prefer not to change it so drastically that it is the other.
Yeah.
I try to just enhance the feeling that I see coming out of the image as I'm working with it.
Let's go back quickly to the phones here and to Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment, and that is I have actually worked with Michael Zide in the past, and I just want to put in a plug for if people own an iPhone or they own a camera, it's just so worthwhile to take a workshop or spend a day with Michael or someone else who is just such a wise teacher.
But he doesn't have an iPhone. How can he do that?
bring your anything and study with Michael Zide or another professional, because you just absorb so much in a couple of hours in one day.
You're very kind. Thank you.
You know, I just feel people don't realize what an amazing learning experience is to work with someone who has been taking photographs for so many years.
So Joanna, do you do photography for fun, or do you?
Just totally for fun. I'm not a professional at all. But the time I've spent with Michael has just been extraordinary. So,
well, it's very nice of you to say. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Let's quickly go over to Bob in the last couple of minutes here. Bob in Clifton Park, you're on with Michael Zide.
Hi. I was going to say something, but let me add to what the lady just said, that a lot of people spend a lot of money on their equipment but really don't spend time and money on learning to take pictures, and workshops are terrific for that purpose. But what I was originally going to say is to add to something that Ray had said earlier, and possibly another person since it, when I couldn't hear. But there are a number of local sources for making prints from a disc, and it's worth, I think, for the average person to not send something away to a professional lab. I've used professional labs. They are great. But it can be a lot easier to simply go to a pharmacy,
yeah,
or a big box store that has the basics that can do
sure.
darn good job.
Depending on what your needs are.
Yes, you know, definitely.
I think what you say is absolutely so. Up to this point, and this is what I found, which was very discouraging as a young photographer, when I would take my shots into... There wasn't a CVS at that point in time, but whatever the equivalent was, I would always look at my pictures and wonder why they didn't look more vibrant, why it didn't look the way I saw it. So I thought it was my fault. And in truth, I mean, it could have been my fault, certainly, but I think more often than not, if they printed badly, you get a very distorted look at what you, the quality of the image that you really had taken,
yeah,
because negatives can be printed in so many different ways. A good lab will print them correctly.
Correct. And of course, you're absolutely right. However, if you're looking at Uncle Joe's birthday party pictures, it might not be worth the financial expenditure. All right. Michael Zide, you have a website, and I know you teach instruction. We talked about workshops and such. How can people find out more about that?
If you go to my website, which is michaelzide.com, you can contact me through that. And if you do that, and you are interested in that, the book that I cannot remember about how to read
the Canadian guy,
the Canadian fellow, I will be glad to reply and send you the name. I do think it's an important skill to practice.
Well, it was a lot of fun having you on the program.
Thank you. Well done, sir. Thank you, Ray.
And again, if you want to take a look, a quick look at Michael's work, go to WAMC.org/VoxPop and click on today's program. There's a nice slideshow there and a link to Michael Zide's website. So thanks again for joining us. Support comes from the Hyde Collection, an art museum at Historic House in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5 and Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Bodywork professionals, licensed massage therapists. Nick Pavaldi, advanced structural integration practitioner, proprietor, offices in Latham and Saratoga Springs. Open 7 days, your massage and bodywork experts, bodyworkprofessionals.com. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years. Independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org. And Fulton County Tourism, in the Southern Adirondack Park, 44 lakes, 44 choices, hiking, fishing, boating, camping, and more. Summer calendar at 44lakes.com. Thanks again to Michael Zide for stopping by today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall is her name. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for news.